Welcome to Shattering This. I am Yada. Our program is devoted to the largest segment of society, to those of you who are waking up to the realization that all of the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they have become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is 877-300-7645. This morning, it is my pleasure to welcome the foremost spokesperson on the religion of Islam into our company. No one understands the religion better. No one is more courageous or compassionate when it comes to exposing and condemning the most deadly plague that has ever been foisted on our planet. His name is IQ Al-Rasuli. He has written two books on Islam, Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. IQ, I'm in a pretty foul mood. I don't normally get in a foul mood, but there's two things that are beginning to bother me a lot. And they really have to do with the rash of Islamic belligerence that we've witnessed these last few days, a car-driving murder in Canada followed by a shooting murder in Canada, both by Muslims, a hatchet attack in New York by a Muslim, and a Muslim driving his car deliberately into a crowd of Jews in Jerusalem and murdering a baby, along with Boko Haram pledging they were going to return the little girls that they had kidnapped and were raping with reckless abandon, only to not return the little girls and to kidnap and rape additional women in Nigeria. So that's pretty commonplace. That's an ordinary week for Islam. So what you might say, what is my issue? My issue is that it is being touted that these Muslims have been radicalized. And then the great debate is it a terrorist attack or not? I don't see either concept having any merit whatsoever. IQ, is there a radical Quran or just a Quran?
First of all, I agree with your anger because I'm in exactly the same foul mood for exactly the same reason. I mean, to find out that in Canada, two attacks by Muslims, to be called radicalized and not associated with ISIS, is literally a criminal offense by the Canadian government.
It is.
The same thing with the American government. The same thing with the European government.
Yes.
There is no such thing as a radical Quran. Quran is radical, militant, extremist, vile, ungodly. Full stop.
Yeah. Is there a different set of hadith, which would be oral reports from Muhammad and his companions, that comprise radical Islam versus regular Islam?
None.
Is there a different prophet? I mean, if Muhammad is the prophet of regular Islam, can you tell me who the prophet is of radical Islam?
Muhammad.
So if there is a Sharia law for extremist radical Islam, what is the law for regular Islam?
Against Sharia.
Is there anything that would differentiate radical Islam from regular Islam? A different God, a different prophet, a different Quran, a different set of scriptural sources, a different history, a different... And is there anything that could be factually used to differentiate between radical Islam and regular Islam?
Zero. Nothing. Doesn't exist. Only in the minds of perverted leaders that we have. That's it. Nothing.
So it's astonishing that heads of state who are responsible for protecting their people would lie and say, boy, you know, one thing is absolutely clear. This individual was radicalized. We ought to be concerned and vigilant about radicals.
Well, he's either stupid or criminally negligent. There is nothing else.
There is nothing else. There really is nothing else. The facts here are overwhelming, folks. In the Quran, in the first eight surahs of the Quran, numerically, essentially the last surahs of the Quran chronologically, where They were revealed during the Islamic era after the Pledge of Aqaba, which was a declaration of war against all humankind. Is there any hint of peaceful Islam in those surahs?
None. Zero.
Is the purpose of those surahs to declare war on all humankind?
Yes. 66% of the Quran is war against all humankind.
And the part of the Quran that's war against all humankind is comprised in the and contained in the last surahs revealed chronologically. And the Quran is so full of contradictions, it actually has two passages that say that when we contradict ourselves, the most recent, the latest statement is the one you should live by.
By the way, of course you're right, but when you say we, Allah is saying that.
Of course, yes, it is. Of course, Allah is Muhammad.
Yes.
Yeah, and we know that Allah is Muhammad because everything Allah said through Gabriel, or is alleged to have said, is perfectly suited to satiate Muhammad's personal lust for sex, power, and money.
Correct.
It reflects Muhammad's perverted personality and character.
The Quran is Muhammad's autobiography.
Yeah.
It's his alter ego. Everything in the Quran centers around Muhammad.
That's the reason why the Quran, it's God, that uses we consistently, because we is Muhammad and Allah, where Allah is, in fact, Muhammad.
Muhammad.
It's, yeah. There is no Allah, and Allah most certainly isn't a god.
No.
Allah is depicted like Muhammad as a terrorist. Allah is depicted in his Quran as torturing people in hell. It's where he spends all of his time in the Quran. He's always depicted in hell torturing people. Allah is admits to mass murder. Muhammad admitted to mass murder. Muhammad committed rape. Allah approves rape. Muhammad engaged in pedophilia. The Quran authorizes it. Muhammad had a harem. The Quran authorizes multiple wives. Everything that Muhammad did, including create Islam based upon terrorist raids, Allah endorses and says that he participates in. They're one and the same.
They are the same, and I want our listeners to understand something. Allah, not only is Allah not God, but Allah is most certainly not the same as the God of Jesus, Moses, and Abraham. He is not the same as the God of the Bible. Full stop. Because he's Muhammad. Allah is the voice of the ventriloquist called Muhammad. Gabriel, Allah, and Satan in the Quran are the voices of one man, Muhammad.
Yes. Correct. And the way to verify that this is true, and to establish a direct link between Muhammad and Allah, Muhammad, the Quran, Muhammad, and Islam, so that people would understand that Islam is nothing more than a reflection of Muhammad's ambition and his perverted character, is that if you were to take the two chronological compositions of hadith, these are all reports from Muhammad and his companion. The Quran, for example, is hadith. It's an oral report from Muhammad and his companions. If you were to take the first compiled hadith collection, it's called the Sirahs, compiled by Ibn Ishaq. It was written down 125 years after Muhammad's death. And you take the history of Islam, which was compiled by Tabari, Islam's foremost Quran scholar, about 200 years after Muhammad's death. These are the first two and only legitimate depictions of Muhammad's life presented in chronological order. If you are to use those to reset the Quran, which is nothing but a jumbled mess out of context and chronology, and to use it to set the Quran into the context of Muhammad's life, it becomes obvious that the Quran is nothing more than Muhammad pretending that his God is endorsing his perversions. Whether those perversions are mass murder, thievery, lying, pedophilia, rape, slaving others, no matter what it is, the Quran exists to satiate Muhammad's personal perverted cravings.
True. I would like our listeners to also understand that there is a word called Al-Khums. Al-Khums means a fifth, 20%.
Yes.
Whereby 20% of all plunder, 20% of all female slaves are given to Allah and to Muhammad. Since Allah doesn't exist, the 20% always went to Muhammad.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, that the way it's phrased in the Quran, it's always to Allah and to his prophet. And the word prophet actually means one who speaks is the actual term. It's Nambi in Hebrew. It just means one who speaks. And so the one who spoke for Allah is Muhammad, because Muhammad was Allah. He's not only the voice of Allah, he is Allah. And it's so painfully obvious when you put the Quran in chronological order and set it into the context of Muhammad's perverted life.
Yeah,
you know, by the way, in the Islamic State, when they capture little girls and force them into prostitution as sex slaves, the Islamic State gets 20% of the benefit of those captured slaves. They get the first 20% off the top. And those who captured the girls and kidnapped them get 80% among them.
But that's what Muhammad did all his life. Well, not all his life. In the 20 years that he was the head of... Well, no, I apologize. In the 10 years when he went to Medina and became...
Yes.
The head of the first organized crime syndicate in human history, based in Medina, he took 20%. The 80% were distributed among all his thugs.
Yeah. I call them the pedophile pirate in the chapter that depicts his initial life in Medina, because of the fact that it was at that time that he took his best friend's six-year-old daughter when he was 50 years old as his sex toy. And it was at that time that he commenced his first terrorist raid, which was nothing but a piracy raid against a caravan for the express purpose of robbing it. And so to call Muhammad the head of an organized crime syndicate, or to call him a pirate, both terms fit. That is how he started the religion of Islam, shattering this. The reason we've been talking about Muhammad, and Muhammad was a terrorist. Muhammad was a mass murderer. Muhammad was a rapist. He was a pedophile. He was incestuous. He was a kidnapper for ransom. He was an avowed liar. Muhammad was amongst the most despicable people who ever lived. Islam has a singular founder. So if you were to say that call Muhammad, in today's parlance, they would call him radicalized. Well, if he's radicalized, then why don't you tell me who created moderate Islam?
Yeah, if you allow me just a few minutes.
Sure.
I want to explain to our listeners and bolster our argument or assertion why the Quran is Muhammad.
Okay.
Dear Americans, first and foremost, no Muslim and no scholar of Islam or any of their apologists would ever point out at the beginning of either their books or their lectures the extremely simple but most paramount and fundamental observation, which is the following irrefutable fact, that humanity has only the words of a single man called Muhammad bin Abdullah, as is transmitted to us by his companions in the Hadith, declaring that he was the messenger of Allah and that Allah revealed to him the verses of the Quran over an incredibly long period of 23 years as and when he needed a revelation. By the way, I call these made-to-order revelations, as actually proven by the Hadith. Ladies and gentlemen, based entirely upon all the Islamic records, there is not a single mention of an eyewitness report by any of Muhammad's wives, nor by any of his most intimate companions, that any of them ever heard Muhammad and Gabriel talk to each other, or had any of them seen Gabriel and Muhammad together. I repeat again. In the hope that my words will sink in, all that humanity has or will ever have, any information about the events that Muhammad asserts occurred to him, are the words of a single pathological liar called Muhammad bin Abdullah, unsubstantiated, unobserved, unwitnessed, and uncorroborated by any other independent source in no proper court of law.
By the way,
would such testimony be accepted as true?
By the way, does Muhammad specifically give his henchmen, his assassins, the authority to lie, to kill those who speak against Muhammad?
Yes, and this is remarkable. Yada, I want to add to it, please.
Okay.
It is remarkable, because when Muhammad tells them, go and assassinate so-and-so, they say to him, but we have to lie. Which means, before they converted to Muhammad's Islam, they were decent human beings. They wouldn't have lied.
All right.
They would say to him, but we have to lie, we have to deceive. He said, no problem. You can lie, you can deceive, Allah will forgive you.
And by the way, well, it's actually not the end of conversation, because they were asking to lie and deceive because Muhammad ordered them to murder poets. A poet who was the official media of that day, because everyone was illiterate, there was no written Arabic at the time, was the moral voice of the community. And three women poets in particular said, are you nuts to follow this man? He is a liar. He's a con man. He's a thief. He's a slave trader. He's a kidnapper. He's a pedophile. He is repulsive. And so Muhammad said, who will go kill him? And so the lies weren't just to mislead someone innocently or to use words like politicians weave them. The lies were the means to commit murder. Makes it even worse.
Correct.
And by the way, in the Quran itself, in the ninth surah, doesn't the Quran in the ninth surah begin with Muhammad as Allah telling Muslims that that any commitment they make, whether written or verbal, is not binding on them? In other words, lie all you want?
Yes. And the poet you're talking about was 120 years old. And the other poet was a female, a woman.
Mm-hmm.
They murdered her while she was suckling her child.
Correct. And Muhammad said, because these guys came back, they felt...
Islam.
Yeah, the murderers came back feeling guilty because she was surrounded in her bed by young children. One was nursing on her at the time they killed her. And they felt remorse. And Muhammad says, don't. It's nothing more than two goats butting heads. It means nothing. By the way, the lie in the ninth surah was about the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, which is a big deal. The reason that I engaged IQ in a more complete discourse of the proven fact that Muhammad was a pathological liar is the fact that he made the statement that we have absolutely no evidence whatsoever that any of Muhammad's claims that Allah or Gabriel or anyone else revealed the Quran to him. There's not a single hadith, not a single historical document, not a single eyewitness to verify this. And so it's important to recognize that the Quran and the hadith prove that Muhammad was a pathological liar, because we only take it at his word. There is another aspect of the Quran, and then I want to move on to another issue. Quran's primary claim, IQ, is that it confirms the Torah, that Muhammad was the last of the Hebrew prophets, and that the Quran confirms the Torah. That's its credibility. It's that it is that the same God authored it. And yet, I'm pretty comfortable saying that I'm an expert on the Torah. I've written several books, long books, many thousand-page books that translate and analyze the Torah. And I think I'm an expert on the Quran. And I can tell you that the Quran and the Torah are exact opposites. It's not that the Quran confirms the Torah. The Quran is the antithesis of the Torah. So the very basis of Islam is an absolute lie.
True. Because Muhammad, in his Quran, says that the food of the Jews is allowed to the Muslims, and the food of the Muslims is allowed to the Jews, when this is a blatant lie.
By the way, what is Islamic food?
It is allowed because halal time.
What is Islamic food called?
Halal.
All right. Have you ever read the prophet Isaiah?
Long time ago.
Okay. You probably read it. I don't know. You probably read it in English. We read it in Hebrew. What you would find is that the name of Satan. Satan is a title. It means the adversary. It's always ha-Satan, ha-Satan. It's the adversary in Hebrew. So it's another one of the Hebrew words that made its way into the Quran, although Muhammad thinks it's a name as opposed to a title. The adversary is actually named in Isaiah. Do you know what the adversary's name is? I'll give you one guess.
No, that means Muhammad.
No. The adversary's name, you've just said it.
Halal?
That's it.
Oh.
The very food that Muslims are told to eat that is pure is named after Satan. Now, Isaiah was written 750 BCE, in other words, 1,400 years before Islam was conceived. 1,400 years before Islam was conceived, the adversary, Satan, was given a name. Halal. Just one of the many indications of the direct correlation between Satan and Allah. While it is true that Allah is simply Muhammad, Muhammad, by his own admission, was demon-possessed. And so when Muhammad reflects his own personality in the Quran and projects it on Allah, because he is demon-possessed, Allah bears many of the characteristics of Satan.
It has to be, because Allah is only a reflection of Muhammad.
Correct.
It has to be. There is no other alternative. There is no chance in hell that any human being can come against you or against me. And to prove us wrong, it's impossible.
Do you know that in the Torah, in the book of Devarim, which has been changed to Deuteronomy, Yahweh, which is God's one and only name, Yahweh gives us his name 7,000 times in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Yahweh says that if you should ever wonder, if somebody claims to speak for God, if you should ever wonder as to whether or not they're actually speaking for me, I'm going to provide you with a test. The test is found in Devarim, Deuteronomy 13, and again in Devarim, Deuteronomy 18. And there are seven aspects of this test. One of the aspects of the test, if he's speaking for Yahweh, he will never use the name of another god. Oops. Muhammad changed Yahweh's name to Allah. Number two, the information that spokesperson will provide will correspond and be 100% consistent with everything that Yahweh has already said. Oops, Muhammad's recitation was the exact opposite. But the real killer in the whole thing is, Yahweh says, if you want to know for certain whether or not I inspired somebody, you will find my signature, and my signature is prophecy. Because I exist outside of the constraints of time, I can report future events in your past and be 100% right all of the time. I will always include prophecy in my testimony. Are there any accurate prophecies in the Quran?
Not a single one. In fact, the Quran negates any possibility of Muhammad being a prophet.
Ever. Right. Correct. It actually says that Muhammad was not a prophet.
Yes.
Not only are there no prophecies, it says he was not a prophet. Right.
Yeah.
Yes. So by the Torah's test, since he claims that the Torah was inspired by his God, the Torah has a test to determine whether or not someone actually was inspired by Yahweh, and Muhammad fails every aspect of that test. There is something also that's just really interesting in the Quran, and that's why we feel very comfortable exposing it and condemning it, and so should the world. Because the religion that that Islam has inspired has been wholly unproductive. It's deadly, it's destructive, it's deceitful, it's damning. It has destroyed everything it's touched. And so when we can speak so clearly about it being false, it actually should give people comfort to expose and condemn this horrible disease. But one of the things that's it's important for people to understand about the Quran is that every historical statement that it makes is inaccurate. Every scientific statement it makes is inaccurate. It provides absolutely no moral guidance of any kind. And its primary themes are repulsive. It is a declaration of war on all humankind. It is a terrorist manifesto. There is nothing beneficial in the Quran, Islam, or Muhammad's life.
I'm trying to figure out, what to say. What is there to say? Every word you say is exactly the same the words I say in 800 more radio interviews. And we can prove it. For example, just give me a second.
Sure.
Muhammad says that Allah revealed the Torah to Moses. We agree that. Mm-hmm. But Muhammad in the same verse says that Allah revealed the Injil, the Gospels to Jesus. Then the next verse in the Baqarah in chapter 2, he says that Jesus did not die on the cross. A lookalike died on the cross. Yeah. And he asserts again in the same verse.
By the way, what is the Quran? What is the Quran's name for? First of all, there was no person named Jesus. Jesus is a completely corrupted name. But what does the Quran call the character now translated or changed to Jesus? What's the actual Arabic name?
Yeshua.
No, I know that's the actual name of the individual Christians misnamed Jesus is Yeshua, but Yahusha actually, but the in the Quran isn't
Esau,
yeah, right?
Esau.
All right, Esau. Now Esau and is what's written in the Quran. Esau is a transliteration of Esau.
Yes.
You know, Esau was the one person that Yahweh called out in the Torah. He says, I hate him. And he said he hated him because he went off and started cavorting with and ended up marrying one of Ishmael's daughters. And so the Quran's Jesus isn't Yahusha at all. It's Esau. And it's not like the Christian New Testament that's written in Greek, and within the Greek alphabet, you can't transliterate Yahusha. It's impossible to transliterate Yahusha using the characters of the Greek alphabet. But the Arabic alphabet is the Hebrew alphabet. And so there is no excuse for Allah / Muhammad to get Yahusha's name wrong. But rather than call him Yahusha, the Quran calls him Esau. Talk about stupid.
It's not only stupidity, but I'm trying to impress upon our listeners that if Allah is the same as the God of Jesus, whether Jesus existed or not, or whether Jesus is Esau or Yeshua or anybody else, I'm trying to destroy the Quran with its own words.
Right. But a great way to do that, a great way to do that is that Yahusha's name is provided in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms 222 times. It's always presented as Yahusha, 222 times. Esau's name is presented in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms as well.
Yep.
And yet the Quran uses Esau and not Yahusha. It's just unbelievably stupid.
Yes, because Muhammad, as you know, he got everything he heard from the Christians and the Jews of Arabia and got it all mixed up.
Correct.
He was not
stupid.
A clever man. He was a genius when he's dealing with the Arabs who were illiterate. but he was a very stupid man when he was against the Jews and the Christians of Arabia. That's why he exterminated them.
Yeah, I don't think... I'm not going to give him the credibility of genius because he, as a pathological liar, he could never remember his lie, one lie to the next, which is why he has so many contradictions. I will say that he was extraordinarily conniving. He knew how to manipulate men to act badly, to promise them rape, to promise them slaves, to promise them booty through stealing, to promise them victory and bloodlust. He knew how to manipulate men to act badly. He was extraordinarily talented at that particular undertaking. It's kind of like, you know, Alexander the Great was really good at manipulating men to act violently, belligerently, badly. Muhammad was supremely good at that.
That is why that is why people in the prisons in Europe and America, the criminals, will easily convert to Islam than go to Christianity.
Of course.
Islam is music to their ears.
Right. Because Muhammad was a rapist. He was a terrorist. He was a mass murderer. He was a kidnapper. He was a slave trader. Everything you can do bad that would cause you to end up in jail, Muhammad did, which makes it part of Islam. When we return, we're going to talk about terrorism. Welcome back to Shattering Disturbing Conversation with the foremost expert on Islam, IQ Al-Rasuli. IQ, there's a second thing that bothered me these last couple of days. I mentioned five Islamic assaults, two in Canada, the one in New York City with the hatchet, one in Jerusalem where the Muslim drove a car into a group of people murdering an American baby, by the way, and then the attack on the little girls enslaving them to be sex slaves in Nigeria. The big debate on all of this is to whether or not these were terrorist acts. And I'm here to tell you that only one of those acts was actually textbook terrorism. The one in Nigeria was textbook terrorism. Those were militants going after a civilian target. All the rest were either guerrilla tactics or some other form of belligerence, but they were not terrorism. Why is the debate over whether or not it's a terrorist act when the only debate should be whether or not the act was motivated by Islam?
I agree with you. This is what angers me. It is all Islam. I always said, it is the Quran, stupid. It is
correct.
The Quran, stupid. It's only the Quran.
Yeah.
That's what motivates them. That's it.
Right. Yeah, the murderer in New York went after cops, so it wasn't a terrorist act. It was a guerrilla act. In fact, the Muslim who perpetrated the act in New York City with the hatchet knew that it was a guerrilla act, and he was encouraging people on his Facebook site in the name of Islam to perpetrate guerrilla acts. The two attacks in Canada were both guerrilla attacks. They were not terrorist attacks. They were against individuals in the military. The thing that really bothers me the most about the one in Jerusalem is that, first of all, it was not a terrorist act because it was a car, not militants that were perpetrating the killing. The baby that was killed, she is an American citizen. Why is it that America declared war on the Islamic State for two fictitious videos of the Islamic State allegedly beheading two journalists who chose to be there, and yet America is providing $5 billion worth of benefits for the mythical people known as the Palestinians, these miserable Muslims, when they go off and deliberately murder little children, American children? Why aren't we declaring war and bombing as opposed to aiding and benefiting this mythical group of people that masquerade as Palestinians?
Remind the Americans who are listening, these are the same Palestinians who in 9/11 were celebrating the Holocaust of 3,000 Americans, and America did nothing.
This is the same Palestinians that created the Palestinian Liberation Organization that prior to Al-Qaeda was the world's most notorious, largest, most successful, most deadly and demonic terrorist organization in the world.
And it still continues in the West Bank under Abbas.
Correct. Yeah, in fact, Fatah is the political arm of the PLO. He's the head of Fatah. They still use the term PLO.
This. Yeah, but how is it possible that you and I understand that, based on knowledge, and the American leadership and the European leadership deny everything we're saying?
Yeah, I can't give them the benefit of ignorance. Because if you're going to run for political office, if you're going to lead a nation, if you're going to be involved in the military or the judiciary or the media, you have a responsibility to shed your ignorance and to know what you're talking about. So you can't give them the benefit of ignorance. Right?
But they're not doing it.
They're lying.
Cameron went in public, said, I'm not an authority on religion, and yet he was an authority to tell the Muslims that the one who killed in the name of Allah in England was radicalized. What does radicalized mean? Everybody who goes to a mosque is radical. They don't have to be radicalized. They're already radical. How can they be radicalized?
He went off and said that Islam is a religion of peace. When has Islam been peaceful?
Well, I don't know. I don't know in which nightmare condition was he born. I mean, Cameron, where?
Where?
It was born.
You look at Islam. It is always fair to criticize a religion based upon the words and deeds of its founder and those closest to the founder.
Correct.
And when Muhammad founded Islam, the first year of the Islamic era, the first day of the first year of the Islamic era, was a pledge of Aqaba to declare war against all humankind. And for the next 10 years of Muhammad's life, he launched or inspired 75 brutal terrorist raids. In the first 100 years of the Islamic
and
era.
Cameron doesn't know that. The Prime Minister of England doesn't know that.
It's just despicable.
In Europe don't know that.
Right.
And it's
inexcusable
that
they would lie on behalf of this deadly disease, because it is merciless to lie on behalf of something so deadly.